How's it going, everybody? My name is Matt Jarboe. Welcome back to Milk Carton Mysteries. Today, of course, is the 20th of January, 2021. It's been a wild day here in the United States, to say the least. I don't know where your political affiliations lie. This isn't really a political podcast, but I don't know about you. I'm feeling pretty good about where things are going. I just wanted to share that, my thoughts on that one. You guys may not agree, but that's okay. We are very much a podcast of differing opinions, and I always want to hear yours. You guys can make sure you keep up with the action by coming over here to Instagram.com/MilkCartonCast. MilkCartonCast, that's what it is. I always seem to forget, as well as Patreon.com/MattJarboe is a great way to help out if you guys want to. And that's just my shilling for the first 30 seconds because I'm clearly a blatant capitalist. That being said, we have an interesting show today. We're going to be talking about a man who impersonated a cop and stole a donut. I just found it to be kind of funny. You have a woman who allegedly avenged her brother's death by taking out the man who allegedly killed him. And then this is a much older, 36-year-old cold case out of Singapore that's making its rounds again, and I just wanted to draw some attention to it. So we're going to be diving into these three stories today. So let's buckle up and let's go right into the crazier news. Let's start off with the crazier news here. A Utah man faces charges after authorities say he impersonated an officer and stole a donut. This is coming in from CNN, so take that as a source with your own grain of salt. Anyway, Daniel Mark Wright, 47 years old, is facing charges after Utah authorities accused him of impersonating an officer, possessing a stolen vehicle, and stealing a donut. You know, triple win for this fella right here. The 7-Eleven employee approached a police officer on Sunday saying that a suspicious person entered his store earlier that day wearing a sheriff's deputy jacket. He didn't seem to be an officer, according to a probable cause statement from the sheriff. The store manager said that the man, later identified as Daniel Mark Wright, stole a donut from the store. Stole the donut. Like, it's 99 cents for a 7-Eleven donut. It's 99 cents, maybe $1.49, not including sales tax. I mean, I've watched people run out with cases of beer that got less attention than this. Anyway, after the employee gave a description of the white truck the man left the store in, police found the vehicle parked in a nearby hotel parking lot. The truck, however, was listed as stolen, and the officer looked at the surveillance video from the 7-Eleven store, which showed a woman in the vehicle. Both Daniel Mark Wright and 40-year-old Christian Rose Olson are facing charges of possessing a stolen vehicle, which is a second-degree felony. That same footage also showed Wright wearing a Salt Lake County Sheriff's deputy jacket with the sheriff shoulder patches and an embroidered badge. So, is it a real jacket or is it a fake jacket? I'm not too sure. With the shoulder patches and an embroidered badge, it feels like they're trying to say that it's real. Which case, where the hell did he get it? That's my question. Police did find the jacket inside Wright's motel room nearby. He admitted that he had been at the 7-Eleven store, but did not answer questions about the stolen vehicle. Yeah, don't admit to the crime, buddy. Just don't admit to the crime. And now, Olson here, or her name could be Christina, and it's just a misprint, but Olson did say that somebody gave them the truck several days earlier, and she didn't know that it was stolen. Don't quite know if that's going to fly in court. Don't know if it's true. Probably not. If the guy's got a sheriff's deputy's jacket and they're driving around in a suspicious vehicle that somebody gave them days before, there's a lot more to the story than the CNN article is giving us. But this is always just like the tip of the spear. Now, the investigators allege that Wright and Olson and the person who gave them the vehicle are involved in extensive criminal activity regarding vehicle burglary and vehicle theft, among other things. Yeah, probably. That's probably why they have the sheriff's deputy jacket, to act like, you know, to make it look like no one from a distance, no one's going to question the sheriff's deputy's jacket. No one's going to go, oh, he's a cop over there. Oh, we're good. We're fine, ladies and gentlemen. The cop is here. Or they're just not going to question it because we're taught to look at that as being safe. That, well, I guess depending on what city you're in and what the color of your skin is, all things considered. But still, that's no one's going to look twice at that. And that's probably why they have it. So maybe it's a fake jacket. Maybe that's what they've done. Wright told the police that he paid for the donut, but the store manager disputes the claim. I love how they're still focusing on the donut. But there was a receipt that they found in Wright's room that did not show a donut purchase. So he probably did pilfer that $1.49. And that is a high estimate, by the way. That's a high estimate for how much this donut might have cost. This isn't like going to a premier donut shop, or if you want to get a bacon maple bar, it's like $3 in the soul of your firstborn child. You know, this is a 7-Eleven donut. They ain't that great to begin with. I would just say write it off. It's, I don't know, Grand Theft Auto and impersonating a sheriff's deputy to me feel like more of a crime we're talking about. However, this article seems to really try to be playing up the joke about the donut, and I will admit, it's pretty funny. Now, this is what the document, this is the charging document says here, that due to prior theft convictions, this theft charge would be a third degree felony. So stealing a donut essentially is being, I'm assuming they're referring to the donut as that being a third degree felony, which I don't know if Utah has the three strike rule. I don't know if that's going to be the whole issue. If that's going to put him away for life in prison. I mean, look at him here. This guy, he looks really sad. He doesn't look happy. He looks really sad. And the bottom part, again, the article trying to play up the humor of the stolen donut said police have not been able to recover the stolen donut. Yeah, pretty sure he ate it. Or they found it and they ate it and they just kept it. That could be a thing too. Who knows? You hear about some dirty cops every once in a while. Maybe he was hungry and he also didn't care about $1.50 donut. I just love how this article is downplaying the whole notion of it, of him wearing a stolen, at least either a manufactured or a stolen sheriff deputy's jacket and involved in a larger criminal conspiracy for vehicular theft and vehicular burglary. Goes to show you that it's just kind of maybe a slow news day over there at CNN. However, as always, I want to hear your thoughts on this one, because why not have a little bit of fun with it right off the bat? So let's dive over here to Kansas City, where we might have ourselves a hero, actually. I'm not going to justify violence or vigilantism. I'm just saying that people out there are going to probably read this headline and go, yeah, okay, she went full Liam Neeson. She went full Liam Neeson, full Taken on this guy's ass. And maybe that's exactly what people need to hear right now. I don't know. I don't know. I don't validate that. I don't approve of that kind of stuff. But I think, well, you know, I'll be honest. I don't agree with it. I don't condone it. I do condemn it. But at the back of my mind, it's like, yeah, you're kind of surprised you don't hear about this shit more often. I'm just saying. Now, this is in Kansas City, Missouri. A Kansas woman is charged with second degree murder after police say she tracked down the man suspected of murdering her teenage brother last week and killing him. I don't know if I mean, second degree is pretty low. That's a low bar. It is a low bar to get through. I mean, she kind of premeditated killing this guy, it seems. If she suspected him as being the one who killed her younger brother, comes across as premeditation, which is murder one. So I think they're going a little bit easier on her, to be honest with you. Police said that she sent a text to her dead brother afterward, letting him know that she avenged him. That's good. That's actually kind of badass, to be honest with you. Now, Titiana Kopich, 21, remains in Jackson County Jail on a $200,000 bond. Her brother, 16-year-old Jason Ugwa, was shot and killed January 10th near Paloma Avenue and Topping Avenue in Kansas City. He was a junior at Hogan Preparatory Academy and a standout basketball player. That's unfortunate. Now, they were also struck. Both the brother and sister were also struck by tragedy in 2016 when their younger brother and cousin were shot and killed. So two people, Jaden Ugwa, I'm completely butchering that, I apologize, Montel Ross, were shot and killed while sleeping in their home. Someone had shot into the house, killing the boys, who were 8 and 9 years old. This case remains unsolved. So look, all I'm saying, I think in this particular situation, almost 5 years ago, losing the younger brother and a cousin and what appears to be a random shooting, or maybe it wasn't. This woman clearly wanted to get revenge. She clearly wanted to get vengeance on somebody. And I kind of understand why she would do what she did here. Now, police are saying that Kopich shot her brother's suspected killer January 13th in a parking lot. The victim's brother had driven him a short distance after the shooting before stopping in the street and calling for help. Responding medical crews worked to save the man, but he had already died. He had been shot in the chest and leg. Police eyewitness accounts and surveillance video, or they used eyewitness accounts and surveillance video to track down the black Ford Escape used in the shooting and speak with Coppedge. She admitted to having called the victim before the shooting, and she said she did so in hopes of the man and her father settling their differences before they killed each other. She admitted to getting into an exchange of gunfire with the victim, but described the situation in a way that appeared to be self-defense, saying he shot her vehicle first before she returned fire, according to a narrative written by police in a probable cause affidavit. So she didn't like, maybe, okay, maybe that's where the second degree comes in. I was wrong on that one there. It came across like, you know, she might have been, I think if she had a gun, and, you know, I don't really know if I believe the call for peace. Like, I just wanted them to settle their differences before they killed each other. Like, this dude shot and killed your younger brother, who was a basketball player who had the possibility of making it big. He was, you know, at a preparatory school, which is not, like, necessarily easy to get into. And you had a gun, and they, I don't know how much of that I believe, to be honest with you. I think the idea there was to lure him in and then, you know, maybe see where it went. But I don't necessarily buy the self-defense. Sorry. And I'm not even being that super critical of her. Like, I don't think she should have done it. Like, but it's so hard. It's so difficult to talk about these things and go like, yeah, I get it. I get it without kind of going while still condemning it. I do condemn it, but I think, you know, if you have a brother or sister or kids or whatever, you kind of like, you might feel the same way I do. It's very hard to outright not kind of go, you know, like golf clap sort of thing. And I'm being a little bit over the top. I'm being a little bit, you know, like a little hyperbole, being a little facetious in my commentary here. I'm just saying it's like, I don't fully buy the story, but I see why she did what she did. Now, investigators reviewed her cell phone and found texts that she sent to a contact named Auntie, asking for 45 caliber bullets, saying, LOL, I sued too many on, bro. She also sent a text to her dead brother saying, I sent an sent a blank to my brother and I owe him that body. Ballistic and forensics examination determined that the gun recovered was the same one used in the shooting. So, I mean, she clearly did it. She clearly did it. She clearly had asked for rounds. Look, that whole notion of like, I owe him that body, I think that was basically like the premeditation at that point. I think she maybe called them to like argue or to try to maybe find a way to settle the beef. But at the end of the day, this is what it was going to go to. Pretty sure the guy fired back at them. So she might be able to argue that. Though, I don't know. I mean, murder too, it's a lesser charge. It's a lesser charge. I don't think they're going to go hardcore for a murder one. I could be wrong, but at the same time, I'm just like, holy crap, like what's going on here? This is insane. But I always want to hear your thoughts on this. This should be interesting. Your guys' commentary on this should be quite fascinating. So as always, let me know. So let's end today by talking about something utterly horrible, the rape and murder of an 18-year-old girl in Singapore in 1985. I know, we talk about only the good subjects here in Milk Carton Mysteries, but the reason why this is fascinating, the reason why this is interesting is because this is, even though it's a 36-year-old story, it is starting to make its way around again. I found this on Reddit being talked about by a few people, and I looked into it, and it's terrible, but it's also fascinating. Now, this is a Mothership article that is horribly written, but I found the Straits Times talking about it originally. This is an article that was originally published in 1985 when this happened, and they just brought it back from the archives because the case is still unsolved. And so this is one of those things where I think a lot of people out there need to kind of maybe hear some of these old stories in order to jog their memory, so to speak. No pun intended with the content of this particular story. So here's what we know. Coming in from the Straits Times, a schoolgirl went jogging near her home and was found stabbed to death beside a deserted stretch of Holland Road. The naked body of Winifred Tiao Suan Lee, 18, who was 18, was found in dense undergrowth about 4 meters from the road, nearly 1.5 kilometers from her home. She had a stab wound in the neck and her hands were bound with her own t-shirt and brassiere when her mud-covered body was discovered by police combing the area. Her pink jogging shorts, or pink jogging shoes, black shorts, and watch were found nearby. So she was jogging alone. Someone grabbed her, forced her into the bushes, bound her hands with her own t-shirt and her bra, and then proceeded to stab her in the neck. With her shoes and shorts and watch found nearby, probably assessing their value, realizing that they might have either been covered in blood or had no value, the person, the murderer, dropped them, I can only assume. Now, police said that Winifred, a pre-university two student of Catholic Junior College, had gone jogging at about 6 p.m. the day before. When she did not return home, her mother reported her missing to the police at 4 a.m. The police, backed by the police task force troop, carried out a pre-dawn search in the area before finding her body about 6 hours later. Police believe that she was murdered between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Wednesday night and are investigating if she had been sexually assaulted. I think at this point they've determined that she's been sexually assaulted. The police spokesman stressed yesterday that every effort will be made to apprehend the killer or killers. She, unfortunately, is the second of three children, lived in a two-story house with her parents. Her father, company director Tiaoju Kim, was away in Munich on business, and he was due to return the day they found her. Her elder sister, Martina, is studying in Australia. Anyway, okay. And the thing is, here's kind of where it gets a little creepy. These two brothers were jogging alone on that stretch, and they said they'd often seen girls jogging alone there. Now, this scared everybody. This created a big panic in Singapore back in 1985, because classmates here were shocked by the news of her death. The two brothers who had been jogging, the ones previously mentioned, they often saw Winifred jogging or cycling alone. They described her as pretty with long flowing hair. They said she usually wore pink jogging shoes and brief shorts. Yesterday, Winifred's classmates were shocked to learn of her death when the news was broken to them by their principal, who had assembled everybody. The vice principal, Mr. Thomas Ho, said the news numbed the students and many of them wept, obviously. You know, I remember when I was in high school and people, you know, and every year a student would die in high school. And I lived in the suburbs of Portland. The student would die, accident, sickness, death, whatever. You know, we had one student's mom murdered. And she worked at the library. I knew her. She worked with my mom, and my mom volunteered at the library. So, like, you know, it impacts everybody, and it impacts them all in different ways. And this was back in the 1980s. I guarantee you they probably didn't have, like, a lot of grief counselors on hand, which is unfortunate. The school chaplain conducted a prayer service that same day, and the students were allowed to go home early. The sad thing is she was jogging by herself because she had homework that she had to get to earlier in the day, and she wasn't able to get out at her normal time. So she went out in the evening. She was preparing to go to an outward camp. She was going to go camping with school. So she was just getting in some exercise before that was going to be a thing. It's tragic when these stories happen the way that they do. It's very tragic when you have these cold cases. It doesn't matter if they're here in the United States or they're in other countries. A murdered person is a murdered person, and justice does need to be found. With any luck, with the advancement in DNA profiling, DNA technology, forensics in general, maybe perhaps this person left behind some DNA. I wouldn't be surprised if in a rush to kidnap, grab, assault, and murder a young woman, that they left behind some DNA evidence. But the thing is, was Singapore police at the time collecting that evidence back in the day? I think they probably were. We hear about these stories all the time here in the States. Cold cases from like the 1950s are being solved now because of DNA matching. And as more and more people submit their DNA to 23andMe or Ancestry.com, a lot of people end up getting these hits. And law enforcement very much now is waiting, salivating, if you will, in order to get those hits. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens with this one. I do hope one day justice does come in for Winifred Tao. It's been 36 years. Hopefully it won't take much longer. But if you happen to live in Singapore or know anyone in Singapore, maybe mention this and see if it jogs anyone's memory. Again, no pun intended. And keeps them in their thoughts, keeps her in their thoughts in order to make sure that she does one day get justice. That would be nice. And that actually brings me to the end of the episode. I appreciate everyone for tuning in. I know that last one is a bit of a crazy one. You know, on the show, I like to cover a wide variety of topics. I like to cover a wide variety of cases. I don't just want it to always be like the most brutal, disgusting murder you could think of. Although, all things considered, a lot of you out there really like that from what I've been told. And I'm not going to lie. I enjoy those kind of macabre details myself. It's a thing. What can I say? You know, I grew up with this kind of stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, I want to know. And that's where I sit. Maybe you guys are like that too. And I think the more that I do this show and the more that I interact with you guys on Facebook or on Instagram, the more I get to know you, the more I get to know the audience, which is pretty cool. So anyway, I'm gonna wrap it up now. If you guys have any stories you want to submit, again, facebook.com/milkcarton or /groups/themilkcarton. Great way to submit some stories there, or instagram.com/milkcartoncast. Remember, if you want to support the channel, support the show, patreon.com/MattJarboe is a great way to do it. I'll talk to you all tomorrow. Have yourself a great day. God bless America, these United States, and peace out, everybody.